Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast where we chat to incredible women about their influences, the adversity they have overcome, and the mantras they live by to help us face challenges in our own lives. This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is Emma Forbes. Hello and welcome, Emma.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm so flattered to be asked.
Oh, pleasure. Thank you so much. Now, Emma Forbes is a well-known broadcaster, presenter of TV and radio from BBC's Live and Kicking, Capital FM, Heart FM, the BBC Radio 2 Sunday Breakfast Show, and founder of a style website dedicated to fashion, beauty, health and wellness, and host of the new Life and Soul podcast. Fabulous. Now, Emma, thank you so much for talking to me today. And lucky you, you're all the way over in Long Island, is it? In New York, or just outside New York, for New Year in America. How exciting is that? How's that been?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's lucky or not. I mean, I've been here since the 11th of March. We came out here. And because I was actually living right in the middle of the city. And my husband, who's like the most kind of cool, calm, collected person, sort of came back from work and just said, I think we should sort of go out to Long Island and sort of pack everything. And I was, okay. And we've stayed here ever since. I've been back into Manhattan twice since March. That's it.
Oh, my word. I thought it was a New Year adventure. I didn't realise it's like that was your lockdown.
Yeah, it's definitely an adventure. And it's definitely, and I definitely feel fortunate being out in Long Island because I do have fresh air. And, you know, I think in COVID-19, we've had to be really grateful for the things that we've got. And I've got a garden and I've got fresh air and I can go for a dog walk. So there are moments when I can be near nobody and take a mask off. And I think that's been a big, you know, a big bonus, to be honest.
Definitely. And you've got a beach?
I'm near a beach. So I can get to a beach and have beach, you know, I mean, now it's sort of -3. So I'd say the beach is quite chilly, but I could go to the beach. And, you know, I think we were, you know, the numbers down here were less than they were, obviously, in all the main cities. But, you know, I haven't been able to get back to England. I haven't been able, you know, like everybody, you know, we've just kind of stuck put, basically. I just wasn't brave enough to move anywhere.
I don't think it's a question of bravery. I think it's a question of, yes, sense and sensibility, isn't it? So hunker down. Well, and I can think of worse places, to be honest. And I can understand you want to be nearer to your daughter, I assume.
The reason we moved to America full-time 3 years ago is I have a daughter on the East Coast and my son is on the West Coast at USC. They both went to American universities. My daughter is graduated and she's got her own business and she's set up, but she is completely wedded to the East Coast. This is what happens, note to self. But my son, who's gone to a university in the West Coast, loves it there. So I've been, you know, so my son has come over. He did the first bit of lockdown with us and then he went back to the West Coast and basically just stayed in his apartment doing online studying like everybody else. And then he's been back here for 6 weeks over Christmas, which has been lovely. So I've had, I mean, my kids laughed. The kind of upside was because they're, you know, they're 24 and 21. They were like, Mum, you've always wanted us back at home. You know, I really got what I wished for on that front, but I wouldn't wish it for them in any other way because obviously, you know, it's been such a challenging time, particularly for that age. I mean, for everybody, but I think particularly for that age group. I mean, the whole point of my son going to USC was West Coast America, huge campus, outdoor life. Yeah, and he's been indoors. So, I mean, he could have been anywhere in the world studying.
Yes. Oh, it's crazy, isn't it? But you're making the most of it by the sound of you. My goodness. And, you know, it's been heart-wrenching for a lot of people separated by oceans, by, you know, countries and everything for a long time, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's that thing of loss of control. You know, obviously, I moved here. I've got an 86-year-old mother, my sister and my nieces and nephews and great-nephews and are in England and all my family, my in-laws and everything. And I guess one never, ever thought that you wouldn't just be able to nip on a plane. And that sounds so now that sounds sort of grand and kind of like, oh my God, just, but there were 18 flights to England a day, you know, if there was something happening. And it's been very challenging. You know, my sister during lockdown got diagnosed with lymphoma. So she's having to go through chemo and I can't be there. And it's killed me, really. I mean, I find that's been a massive challenge. But, you know, I think everybody's in the same boat. Everybody I speak to has got a story where they can't be with somebody.
Awful. And your mum as well, not being able to see her is awful, yeah. Awful. So it's been a lot of really sad, heart-wrenching stories like that. But there's also been a lot of opportunities it's opened up. Like you said, the lifestyle choices, you know, that even your husband in banking assumably can work from home. And the world has got smaller in some ways, hasn't it?
So I think there's a lot of, having started off with a negative, I think there's a lot of an upside, you know, for what's happened. I mean, you know, whether one's spiritual, or I know there's sort of all different ways of looking at this pandemic, you know, the kind of spiritual side, the moon clashing with, I've looked into more moons, full moons, moons in something. I don't really understand any of that. But I do think that it has reminded us all of what matters in life. It's put life very much in perspective. It's realized that, you know, for me, it's made me kind of realize that actually, you know, we don't need a lot of this stuff. We just need, you know, to have one's health is complete wealth, like, you know, health and taking care of one's health. And I think, you know, for whatever mocking I used to get about all the, you know, because I've always been really interested in wellness, but now, you know, I think it's made everybody go, actually, we need to be the best version of ourselves to kind of fight this pandemic. You know, we need to be as strong as we can. And I think we've had family values have come back. I think people have taken time to eat together and cook together and all those things that, I mean, particularly living in America, you know, where fast food is like, you know, I've got American friends that, and they won't mind me saying this, but you sort of go to their house for dinner. And in my books, that means me cooking, but you go to them and they're like, oh, Nikki, do you want a pizza? Because, you know, Charlie's getting like Chinese takeaway and it comes and it's like fast and furious and everything's sort of like chaotic. And I think people have kind of gone, wow, you know, actually, I've shopped locally, I've been to the farm to get the vegetables, I'm going to cook it, we're going to sit, we're going to eat.
It's quite sacred, isn't it, really?
Yeah,
it,
and chat. And I mean, I've set up my podcast and my website during the whole lockdown thing, which, you know, perhaps if I hadn't been in this situation, I wouldn't have had the time to do that.
So there has been, yes, huge upside, huge opportunity. And you're so right. You know, we were all very complacent and took too much for granted. It really just shows us we've just can't, can we? And I don't think we ever will again, if whenever we come out the other side. So I just want to touch on your career a bit. You first got into TV, winning a competition on Going Live with a cookery show. So you still love your cooking. And I'd read that you said you bombarded the production office with ideas until you got some work. Was that right?
Yes, I didn't win a competition. I basically wanted to get into TV and I was working for sort of very tiny sort of new channels that were starting. It was a sort of beginning of like BSkyB and everything. And I was doing this desperate slot. I used to make sort of beauty masks with a Magimix on a terrible program I think One Man and His Dog watched. And I used to watch Sarah Green and Philip Schofield on Going Live. And I just thought, oh my God, that's the dream. Like, that's where I'd love to end up. So I kept writing. In those days, you wrote to the producer, Chris Bellinger. And I kept writing to him and I'd be like, you know, and I'd send him my big clunky VHS showreel that my husband sweetly would make by sort of linking two machines together. And I'd send him this, and he was so lovely. He would write back to me and he'd say, thank you so much for your showreel, Emma. I don't need anybody at the moment, but keep in touch, send me any other ideas. He always gave me a little kind of carrot. And so I'd send him endless ideas, you know, oh, thank you for your email, you know, what about this, what about that. This went on and on for about a year, and at the end of the year I suddenly got this letter back from him and he said, why don't you make an appointment to come in and see me. I mean, I could relive that moment a million times. I got to the BBC and I was like so excited. And I walked through, and Going Live had this really long office and his office was right at the end. And I walked all the way through and I just thought, oh my God, this is everything I would love in a job. And I went into his office and he was super sweet. And he sat me down. And he said, Emma, you have bugged me to death for a year. And he said, I've got Sarah Green and Philip Schofield. I just don't know what you could do on my show. Like, I don't need anything. And genuinely off the top of my head, I just said, oh, not cookery. You don't do cookery. And he stopped and he went, you're absolutely right. He said, can you cook? Answer is, I couldn't at that point. I said, yes, absolutely. He said, could you cook for Joe? I said, oh, 100%, 100% I couldn't. He said, you've got 6 minutes live with Philip next Saturday. We'll see how it goes. I've never even done live television. I mean, I was like a complete novice.
And you learned to cook very quickly. Oh, so you did bombard him. So it wasn't a competition, but it felt like one, didn't it? But obviously, both your parents are very well-known actors and writers. Yeah. And you grew up immersed in that world, didn't you? You moved and lived abroad in Hollywood and Spain as a child when they were working in the industry, didn't you? So you've probably always loved the entertainment world.
Well, I'd always loved it. And I suppose, you know, I'd had this sort of, I guess to others, quite an extraordinary upbringing, because my dad, basically, if he got a job, it was written in his contract that if it was going to to take him away for home for longer than a period of 3 weeks, the family had to go. So he made a film called The Stepford Wives, which was all filmed in Connecticut, actually, out here on the East Coast. And so it was a year and a half filming. So we moved here for a year and a half. So I had a kind of, a well-traveled childhood. And I saw, I guess, the highs and lows of the industry through them. You know, it was a very good insight into, you know, seeing them feast or famine. You know, it was kind of, it was all in, and it was kind of amazing. And we'd go off somewhere and then we'd come back and then my dad might not work for 6 months. It was like that.
Gosh, amazing. But the family get-togethers must have been so fun and creative and still are, by the sounds of it, in terms of...
Yeah, I mean, we're a very loud family when we're together.
Why not? You've got that showbiz, the showbiz.
I can honestly tell you that we are, because we've been doing these family Zooms in lockdown. And my husband obviously Zooms all day in meetings. And we did our Christmas Zoom. And we all said to Graham, my husband, we were like, how do you handle a meeting? Because like, we can't hear each other. We're all chat. And he went, because it's really well organized in a meeting. He said, you're all so loud, like fighting for air.
Yes, you're all the entertainment side of the family. He's the financial side. Sensible words. So your stylish and successful mother, the well-known actress and writer Nanette Newman, was famous for British film classics, as you said, the original Stepford Wives film and International Velvet, both of which were directed by your father, Brian Forbes, who you must miss dreadfully as well, bless you.
I do. I mean, I have to say he was very ill in the last 5 years of his life. So there's a huge part of me that's like, I'm glad he's not here and been ill during this, because I think it would have been very frightening. I think it's very frightening for elderly people. So I really miss him, but I'm glad he's not alive during this pandemic, because I think it would have been, you know, a pretty miserable existence. But I do miss him, because I miss his great, he had a great wit and wisdom, and he was my sort of go-to for worldly advice. So there's a huge part of me that, you know, really does, you know, miss his presence, because he was a very, you know, he was a very big part of all of my family's life. And so, it's that circle of life, really.
Oh gosh, I know. There's so many people feeling that in this climate. Yeah. It's just terrible. Now, I know you talk about your career in terms of chapters and chapters of broadcasting. Did you have a favourite chapter of your life? And are you going to get involved with American broadcasting now?
Well, so here's the thing. So you're right. It is in chapters in my life. And I guess my favourite working chapter was the whole Saturday morning kids TV job. Because I sort of rode this mad crest of a wave, and I was doing Live and Kicking every Saturday morning. It wasn't even like a job. I loved it, because for me, my work was always about being part of a team. I loved the adrenaline of live TV. It was funny. It was amazing guests. And celebrity and fame were very different then. I mean, it makes me sound like I'm 102, but there wasn't Instagram, there wasn't social media. So it was in a very sort of, different way, I feel. So I loved that. I loved doing radio. I adored doing radio. I've loved all, actually, aspects of my career. I loved doing, when I did Talking Telephone Numbers with Philip, I called it, you know, Hey, It's Monday, because I used to go in and I just used to laugh all day. I mean, I just loved it. I loved all my jobs. and then, you know, when I came out to America, I sort of thought about, you know, maybe I could do something. And I would love to be on American TV. But it made me laugh, because I got an agent here for a bit, and they wanted somebody to be a sort of royal expert. They were like, oh my God, you speak the Queen's English, you'd be brilliant, and this, that, and the other. And so I sort of said, well, I'm not really an expert. But I went on to Fox News, and I realized that I'm completely unknown here, and I'm not into fame, but it's very different when you're sort of completely unknown and you go into something that you are so familiar with, if that makes sense. Cool. So I went into Fox News, and of course there's the broadcaster hosting it, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I would love to be doing that, really. That's the bit I want to do. And so instead then I go live, and I can't remember what bit of the royal thing I was sort of giving a view on or whatever, but they suddenly had to fill time because something happened. They went, Emma, I'm afraid we're going to have to talk for like 5 minutes. I'm like, dream come true. So yes. I'm filled with her chatting about left, right, and so I don't even know what I chatted about, the Queen's table manners or something. And afterwards she said to me, you know, the host of this program said, you're really quite good at this. Like, you know, this is...
Yes, you've no idea what I've been doing all my life. How fabulous. Well, they love British voices.
I thought, actually, I need to start again. It's why I'm doing the podcast and everything. I sort of need to be known again. I need to kind of start again, you know, and that's what COVID's shown me, is that I can't, you know, you can't just sort of pick your career back up again when you want to. You have to kind of work for it. And I'm starting from scratch here. So that would be the dream.
Yeah, they love a British voice. So I'm sure it'd be fabulous. Now, I was going to ask you about that with your podcast. You've taken your broadcasting skills into founding your own podcast, Life and Soul. Yeah. I love the name. Obviously, I want you to tell us more about that. But I hear it only launched in November and it's going really well already, hasn't it? What did I read about your downloads?
I'm so excited by it, really. I sort of came up with the concept and I obviously sort of in lockdown and everything, I thought I'll try and combine everything I love, which is sort of a little bit of everything, but with a bias towards sort of health and wellness, and I guess finding out how you can be the best version of yourself. And I thought, well, I'll bring on a few experts. I chat to a few experts, not in a podcast, but on my website, you can get 15-minute sound bites of experts in different fields that are people that I've met. And then I basically just started asking people. I've met lots of people, and I was like, I'm doing this new podcast. Would you come on? And I guess they were all captive audience. They were like, sure, I'll do it. It's like you asking me. I mean, I love it. Everybody prefaces it with, if you're not too busy. And I think I emailed you back going, the days of being busy and making an excuse for not being able to do a podcast are pretty slim now.
But no one's busy, so everyone's about, but you know all those A-listers.
I just threw away my 2020 diary, which was completely empty.
I know, there was nothing, there was not pointless, wasn't it? But you know all these A-listers though, don't you? I mean, for goodness sake, you know. Dame Julie Walters, Twiggy, Catherine Jenkins. I mean, you know, you obviously know some very well-known people and influential women in your podcast lineup. I mean, any influential tips from those incredible women as well?
Do you know what? They've all been incredible and inspiring. And I was sort of blown away by everybody, like Catherine Jenkins, for instance, who in lockdown kept, you know, she's our kind of Dame Vera Lynn of England. You know, she basically kept everybody entertained doing these Facebook concerts. She sort of risked everything, you know, to film that amazing Christmas spectacular in the Royal Albert Hall. She's sort of a unique, amazing woman. Yes. So I found her completely awe-inspiring. You know, Julie Walters has just overcome bowel cancer and was really great because she said it made me realise that my work stressed me out and I really only want to do work that doesn't stress me out. And she lives on a farm with her husband. They actually live on a proper farm. So people have sort of been very willing to chat. Zandra Rhodes is my guest this week. And she was incredible because she was sort of talking about inspiring young people and keeping going and how to keep creative. So everybody's had an angle, and I think people have been very willing to kind of chat and share and inspire. And so it's been lovely for me. I just have got some incredible guests on.
And you've still got keeping in touch and, you know, very well-known guests that are revealing all about their life, what drives them literally from their soul. So I love the way you do that. I know you said you wanted to go deep and, you know, get to the nitty gritty. And I think everyone's reflecting more on what drives them and makes them happier now, aren't they? And what to live for, you know, what drives all of us, as you say, being our best self. I mean, I loved listening to some of the ones you'd got there. And Dame Julie, as you say, talking about her illness. And Catherine saying she has to be so careful not to catch a cold with her voice and her work. Even, you know, she used to anti-back the airline seats and car seats anyway before, didn't she? So she was ahead of her game.
It's so funny. We're talking. So I've talked to a lot of guests about that because I was always the person. I drove my children mad. I'm like, who's laughing now? I always got on a plane. I'm sorry to all the airlines out there, but they're all filthy. They all were filthy. I haven't flown now. I'm hoping they're a darn sight cleaner. But I always used to get on with the wipes and wipe my kids' seats down and wipe the screens and do the anti-back and then put the lavender oil. And they're like, Mum, honestly, this is like mortifying. And I'm like, now who's laughing? Because I was like ahead of the game. And Catherine Jenkins was like, and of course, I hadn't really realised that, but you're right. She had to do it because of her voice. You know, she couldn't catch anything.
Yes, and you with your voice as well, because if you do catch a cold, you know, it actually really affects your work, doesn't it? And mine, you know, but obviously yours is a bit more up there.
So it's important for everybody. And I think it's made everybody, I mean, it's sort of horrifying in a way, if you think about it, that there are TV commercials that had to teach us how to wash our hands and stuff like that. But, you know, it was something that needed to be done.
But the Life and Soul podcast, it wasn't your first foray into podcasting. You had one with Gemma Shepherd, fashion stylist, at the beginning of lockdown, Gemma and Emma, and a previous one, a women-centred one, Lifestyle News Hound. So are those still going or is it morphed into your new...
So with Gemma and I, it's literally on pause because the joy of Gemma and I doing our one was that we got together over a cup of coffee with somebody in the house and we chat through the food and everything. And of course, she was living in Ibiza. She's now in London. And of course, we can't really make that work in the same way. So we've sort of, we had an amazing run of it for 2 years with incredible guests. And what we're doing is it's there and we'll go back to it. But, you know, while we physically can't be together, it's quite hard to do it.
Yes. So you can duck in and out, and you've got this new amazing one. And gosh, it's going.
And so I've got this new one. Yeah. So we're sort of, you know, so I'm sort of just trying to, yeah, I guess come out of this feeling like I've achieved something, feeling like I'm putting my voice out there, helping people. I felt like, you know, again, in COVID, I felt like kindness is a currency that perhaps we all didn't use as much as we could, because I think kindness in COVID, I've seen it with my sister undergoing chemo, the kindness of her friends and people around her and what they're doing, just the small kindness of people is incredible. And I think it made one really reflect on who one had around one. You know, I think it's like made one go, you know, is that person good in my life? Or are they, is that sort of, I think it made everybody kind of go, okay, I really need to like pick my tribe well. You know, I really need to like look around and go, what works for me? What doesn't work for me? And I think I've definitely become more like that.
Like a reboot, definitely. So I think we all needed to make sense in the madness of the year, obviously, the dreaded year we don't want to mention of 2020, and we'll happily say goodbye to. But what have you learnt this year, and anything that you appreciate more?
Oh, I've learnt a lot. I mean, I really have learnt a lot. I've learnt to not sweat the small stuff. I've always suffered from anxiety to some sort of degree, and I've learned that actually sweating the small stuff does you no favours. So it's made me very conscious of really trying to be, you know, much more in control of that, or, you know, work on anxiety over little things and save it for the bigger stuff, because God knows this year there was a lot of bigger stuff and I was like, why did I sweat about that when there's this going on? So it's made me hugely appreciative even more of family and health. I would say, you know, I'm more appreciative of good health and trying to maintain good health, and I'm even more appreciative of my family, because I think, you know, we all got very caught up in our lives. You know, I was sort of here, I was always living on a plane or flying here, there and everywhere and back and forwards, and it's made me it's made me very nostalgic to be with family, but it's also made me very appreciative of being with family, and it's made me learn a lot about, I guess, myself. You know, I've had much more time to myself. It's made me realize my passions more. That's why I'm going back to broadcasting. I need it. Like, it's something that makes me function better. It's what I passionately love to do. Absolutely. And it's made me, I hope, a sort of, you know, a better friend to the people that I have in my life. But realize that, you know, I did need a sort of reboot of kind of who I was surrounded with, because it takes something massive to realize who's there for you, or who does that little thing that you kind of go, wow, that's just the loveliest thing ever, or who reaches out. And I remember a saying that somebody told me that I never really believed. I think they said, you know, I think it was when I got to 50, they said, if you can count your best friends on one hand, you're really lucky. And I thought, God, that's only five. That doesn't seem very many. And, you know, we're sort of, but I think it's never truer.
So everyone's been going through their own stuff at the same time. It's been really challenging, hasn't it? But I think it's made people be okay to be on their own, or to have to learn to be okay on their own, which people really shied away from or didn't want to do before, did they?
We could always distract ourselves. And I include myself in that. We could keep really busy. And the thing is about a pandemic, there's a limit to how many drawers you can clear out, and there's a limit to how much soup you can make for your freezer. And you know, you have to,
I still haven't done that.
Yeah, you have to learn to like be, yeah, because Zoom is great, but it's not the same as being in the room with someone.
No, you don't have that same energy, do they? I wish I could be in Long Island. So we've all struggled, as we say. And in fact, I read something today actually that said, we've pulled together while staying apart, we've kept moving forward without the option to go back, and we've all accomplished more things than we thought possible. And I thought that was such a lovely perspective, because we can be all, you know, even throughout a day, doom and gloomy, or, you know, bad day, good day, bad moment, whatever. But actually to think it has had some magic in the madness, hasn't it?
It has. And I think that there's been a lot of humour. You know, there's been, you know, I think it's shown social media in its extremes. It's shown the really selfish, not so pleasant side of it, but it's shown other people that have done, you know, I've had friends that have done such good things on social media and used it in the right way for sort of inspiring messages and being very funny or witty or putting up posts that make you laugh. I mean, yeah, I've got lots of friends that have done that.
Which is brilliant, isn't it? Now, this podcast obviously helps people heal over adversity with Thrivers and Survivors by giving them inspiration and coping tips for tough times. And you've touched on a few things personally that you've had as extra challenges this year. Is there anything particularly that, as an adversity, that you've overcome to give others strength?
I think I've just realised the sort of fragility of life, if you know what I mean. I, you know, sadly, like we all do, I have known people and around me, close to me, further away from me, with cancer, going through, you know, operations and things. And I think when it sort of happened to my sister, you realize how life just changes in an hour, you know, that kind of split second. So I've realized how precious life is. I've realized the difference you can make. I mean, one incredible thing that happened during lockdown is that my daughter set up her own company in fashion, and she needed somebody to do the sewing. I was helping her sew, but it didn't really work. And she was making masks in the beginning, and it's developed into her own design. It's an incredible story. But the main thing about it was that we needed to find somebody to do the sewing. And I went to the local fish shop and I went, do you think there's anybody that needs any work? And they said, oh, you need to meet Michelle. And my daughter and I were like, who's Michelle? And they went, just meet him. And Michelle is an 87-year-old man, Frenchman, living out here. His partner died 15 years ago. His life was really all but over, in truth. You know, he was really hard on his luck, wasn't earning any money. There's no jobs to be had. And he was really kind of, you know, not in a great way. And we went and met him. And we just had this extraordinary thing. And suffice to say, he and my daughter have set up business together. He does all her sewing.
Oh, wow.
I cook for him. We adore him. Oh. And he's given, you know, he's given Lily, my daughter, this amazing mentorship that she would never have got in life pre-COVID from somebody that was a couture seamster who knows how to cut patterns and do all of this thing. And she's given him, you know, a life back, and he calls her his sunshine. And he literally rings me and goes, you know, I you've given me a life back. Like, I look forward to getting up in the morning. And we went in and kind of did his cows for Christmas and put a tree in it and cleaned it. And I fill his fridge and cook. And he is a completely different man. And so for me, I guess that was a real lesson in how we can turn things around through, you know, kindness, reaching out to people. It sounds so trite, and I don't mean it to sound like that. I just mean it's having the time to do that. It's having the time to check on a neighbor or an elderly person or give some, you know, it's that kind of community spirit, I guess. I've really learned much more about communities.
So touching. Oh, good for them. So which strong women have inspired you in your life?
I've had a lot of women inspire me in my life. I mean, I'm inspired by all sorts of people. I would say I'm, you know, I'm not a political person. I try to be really sort of down the line with my views on things. But I've always sort of, I mean, in career-wise, Oprah's always been way out there for me in terms of like somebody that I go, you know, Oprah is queen in my books. I adore that woman. You know, over the years, I've found people like Michelle Obama super inspiring, all kinds of people. And sometimes, you know, it's people that just sort of come into my life. I mean, I had this amazing woman in my life who used to take care of me when I was little, but was my huge rock in my life. And somebody I kept in touch with. She looked after me or helped me when my parents were working between the ages of 1 and 8. But she was just my rock. She was my kind of Scottish rock. And she died she was born in the last pandemic and she died in this one, but she was aged 101.5 years old.
Wow, amazing.
And up until a week before she died, she was still giving me inspirational advice. So I sort of find it from all different sources, really. I've never been sort of, it doesn't have to be strictly from somebody that's like famous and out there. I find it from just different places.
And you know, you admiring the American hosts of podcasts and politicians and Michelle Obama and Oprah, you're in the right place now. If they're listening, we'll all do a show together. Brilliant. And you've got, obviously, your parents as incredible role models, both of them with talent, grace and style that they had, and the youthful genes. You know, your mum still looks amazing. And what's the secret of your youth and your mother's youth?
Well, it's so funny. I mean, again, I'm not remotely judgmental, but I've never, ever done anything to my face. I've never done Botox, fillers, peels, and not out of kind of, oh, I don't need it. I'm terrified. I'm that person when you read, like, you know, oh, 1 in 1,000 people come out with like lumps after. It would so be me. So I'm just like, I just think, don't try. And my mother was a real sort of like Pond's Nivea woman. She's never done anything and she looks amazing. And so I was just like, I'm going to go that route. And then I was laughing because actually out here in America, I mean, women have been going nuts in lockdown that they couldn't get their you know, their fillers and their Botox and all of these things, because people do, Americans talk about it like a procedure. They kind of meet you for lunch, but they go, I'm just, yeah, I'll meet you for lunch. I'm coming from a procedure. And a procedure is like, and I'm like terrified by that. I'm like, I don't want to go anywhere near a needle.
No, I wouldn't either. We don't need procedures, do we? We're influential women.
I guess my sort of theory on it is, I just think aging gracefully is really attractive. And I think because of media and social media, we've sort of lost the confidence to do that. We're such a quick fix, you know, world. And I think actually, I just, you know, I always say to my children, I'll be that unique person. They'll go, well, we've got Emma on today who hasn't done anything. And I'll be like a unique person that they'd be sort of like a case study. So I think it's just about eating well. I take care of my skin. I guess I sort of like resigned to aging.
Embracing aging. That's what we're doing.
Yes.
And why not? And in lockdown, you know, people are far more natural, aren't they? And not getting as judged as they were, because none of us have time or nothing's open. So passions-wise, what are your hobbies? What do you get up to when you're allowed to do anything?
I'm a very passionate cook. So I find cooking, and I know a lot of people find cooking the most stressful thing ever. I actually really love cooking. And in lockdown, I've made more variations of soup than I could even list to you. And I too fell into the banana bread thing. You know, I baked a lot of banana bread. So I really like cooking, and that's a great passion of mine. And I love reading cookbooks. Like, I love to get a cookbook and actually sort of read it and then adapt a recipe. So I do that. I did do a needlepoint right in the beginning, but I've gone off that now. And I love dog walking. I love walking. I love doing like big walking. That's another great passion of mine. And so having a dog in lockdown, that's given me the good excuse to kind of keep doing that walking. So that's been nice.
Definitely. And those are brilliant well-being things too. And, you know, you're obviously passionate about health and well-being, which I am too. And in fact, your blog says, and your website says, you like to bring out the best in life and bring others joy. And I like that. Yeah. That's obviously what you're doing.
Yeah, I do. I just think what you put in is what you get out. And I mean that in every sense of the word. You know, yeah. I think what you put into your body, food-wise, you know, supplement-wise, but also mentally, you know, I think what you put in is what you get out. And I'm really not perfect like that. I'm a real work in progress. I'm very good on the kind of the food and the supplement bit. But, you know, I really have to work at anxiety and feeling, you know, low or whatever. I really have to work at it and finding ways. Like, I've been trying so hard. And somebody said to me the other day, you've got to take trying out of it to meditate in lockdown. So everybody's like, meditate, meditate. And I listen to a meditation. And I'm like, oh, I'm going through the shopping list in my mind. Like, I can't get out of it in order to do it.
To just let those thoughts go.
Let it go. And there's a real art to letting go. And I'm still learning that art. And that's why I wanted to do the podcast and do the website, so that I could sort of learn with people. I'm sort of using people. There's this amazing life coach that I speak to that I work with. But I was like, you know, Bill, we got to share this, because, you know, I'm a work in progress, and let's get that out there.
But I think you're not alone in lockdown. I think people, you know, that had anxiety before is now off the scale, or anyone that never had anxiety or mental health, everyone is suffering. So we're all trying to work out, what do we need to do to de-stress?
I think actually that's going to be the biggest thing after all of this. I mean, during it, but after it, because I think, you know, we're so consumed with all the graphs of what's happening and all the rest of it. But I think mental health is going to be off the Richter scale on every level, because I think, you know, it's the underlying thing. As you say, if people were depressed before, my God, you're going to be depressed after it. People losing jobs, you know, that's why I've sort of counted my lucky stars. Because imagine if I was in a sort of, you know, basement one-bedroom flat with a newborn baby crying, arguing with a husband. Like, there's so many variations where you just think, this is mentally such a challenge for people.
We are lucky, definitely. And that's what it has to come down to, those basic values. And that's what I say to my teens, you know, when we've got a roof over our head and food on the table and people that love us, you know, that we've got a lot more than a lot of people out there at the moment. Yeah. So it really has to come back to that basics. So do you have a mantra for living your life then?
There's a quote that I love, just because it's just a great quote. It's always just be yourself because everyone else is taken. Quote by Oscar Wilde. And I just sort of love that, because people often ask me why I didn't go into acting and why I did presenting. And I said, because I was only ever really good at being myself. I'm not very good at acting being somebody else. And if you're a broadcaster, the plan is you should be exactly the same in a conversation in Sainsbury's as you are when you're interviewing somebody. somebody on a podcast because you're being yourself. So I love that quote. And then I try to say to myself, there's nothing to fear but fear itself, which was a quote that I heard, a mantra that I heard. My mother was very into alternative medicine, very ahead of her time. And we used to go and see this extraordinary holistic doctor in the middle of nowhere, but he used to sleep in his garden in England. Can you imagine? All year round. And he was sort of 102 when I saw him. So I definitely know he's not alive now, unless he's a complete miracle. But we would go, and he was the one that told my mother to, like, if we had a sore throat, she'd make an infusion of red sage and we'd gargle with it. He was very into all these alternative things. Yeah. But he was very calming. And he just used to say, Emma, there's nothing to fear but fear itself. And it's a very true thing, really. We fear. And never more than this year. Like, the fear-mongering, I think, is incredibly detrimental. So I try to sort of repeat that to myself, that fearing fear is almost, yeah.
And I think that's so true, because actually, you know, none of us can control anything anymore or rely on anything at all. So we just have to come back to living in the minute by minute.
We have to be in the present. And I have to remind myself, I don't have a specific mantra, but I do try and remind myself to live in the present. I remember reading the book, The Power of Now, and thinking, yeah, you know, but we all controlled our lives. I mean, I tried to always live present, but we could always just kind of switch a plan, change something, not cook dinner, go to, you know, go out. And now we've had to relinquish that control.
I was saying that to my daughter this morning. I was saying, all people have got is walking and dogs, really, at the moment. That's all, you know, that is all we have. So I was thinking, everyone that hasn't got a dog needs to get one or borrow one, because there isn't anything else at the moment. It's just all about walking, which is good for us, but yes, it's unreal.
No, it's difficult. I mean, I my dog, you know, I honestly, we all say it all the time, I don't know how I'd have got through COVID without the dog, to be honest. I mean, I was just lucky I'd got him like the year before COVID. But I mean, and we laugh at night, we kind of go, if dogs could talk, I think they would say that 2020 was the best year of their lives. They have had unadulterated love. They've had more walks than they could ever think of. They've got all their family around them. They're never left by themselves. Nobody went on holiday and left them behind. They just literally have, I mean, my dog has literally lived his best life. Every day is a good day in COVID.
He's going to have anxiety next year, though, that poor dog. We need to have dog therapy is what we need to go into.
Yeah, he's going to have massive anxiety if I ever go on holiday again.
So what about your influences? I gather Richard Attenborough is your godfather, who worked with your lovely father. I presume he might be one of your influences too. Amazing.
Well, you know, he was when he, yeah, I mean, sort of growing up, he definitely was. You know, I guess I had, yeah, I mean, I had a lot of people in my life that was sweet. I mean, he was somebody, he was just adorable. He always used to say to me, when I was a teenager and going through sort of turbulent times, he'd say to me, I'll always be the person outside that come and pick, that'll have the engine running ready to pick you up, which was so sweet. So he was a lovely man. So yes, I mean, I've been very lucky. I've had a lot of really good people. And actually my biggest influencer now, and I genuinely mean this, is my sister. I am blown away by her courage in the face of adversity, because weirdly she's 6 years older than me and she's never been in hospital. She's never been ill. She kind of, you know, doesn't do the small stuff. Like, she doesn't get colds. She doesn't get bronchitis. And she ends up with lymphoma and in the middle of a pandemic with nobody able to be with her. Even when the news was delivered, she had to be in a room on her own. You know, that's a big deal. And she has, I don't think I've ever been more blown away by somebody. I mean, her courage, her humor, her spirit, has blown me away. It's sort of blown everything else into perspective and blown it out of the window. I'm just like, wow, if she can do that, that's, you know, pretty incredible. Because talk about being given, you know, like, you know, these are big challenges for people at this time. And she's been incredible. So she's my sort of inspiration, really, at the moment, because we basically put ourselves on Zoom together, and I just sort of keep her in the background. So I cook and I futzy around and I do stuff in my bathroom and we chat and then we don't. And then she does a bit of a jigsaw and I'm kind of, you know, trying to find it. And it's been incredible.
Oh, you obviously really miss her, and I'm really sorry that you're going through that. Yeah. That's, and sorry that, yeah, she is. Yeah. That's really hard. I'm so sorry. So what's next for you then, Emma? Taking your podcast to new heights, being on the Oprah show.
What I'm trying to do, and I think, again, what COVID's taught me, is I'm just doing it sort of slowly but surely. I think there was always an element of me that wanted it sort of overnight, actually. Yeah. The previous me, pre-COVID, sort of wanted to, like, set it up, get it done, get it out there and do it. And I'm just doing a really lovely version of that, where,
the serene,
you know, it's just serene. Yeah, I just sort of email people and then I'm kind of doing that. I think, oh, I wonder if they do it. And I just email and kind of go, would you like to come on? And that would be great. And I'm sort of, you know, I can work a lot on the pod, on the website and try and find new things for that. So it's actually just been really lovely, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It's just been really, so the answer is I'd love to take it to new heights. I'd love to kind of be able to do more of it. I'd love it to be a podcast that kind of got up there in terms of the go-to ones to go to, if there is such a thing. I think I just made that phrase up.
Go-to podcast. But isn't it already? Hasn't it? Did I read? Has it had 70,000 downloads or reviews or something?
I don't really know the answer. Somebody told me the other day, apparently, I'm the most non-technical person ever. Yeah, there's some website I can go on and find all this information out. I actually have zero information on you. I'm just hoping that because I'm getting some really nice comments on my Instagram.
Oh, but it sounds brilliant. And, you know, please share some of those A-listers with us if they've got any more time in COVID, because we'd love to talk to some of those influential women. Brilliant. So lastly, what wisdom would you say to uplift or influence women or men listening out there? Because men love listening to our Influential Women podcast too.
You know, don't, however bad this has been, let's kind of keep that sort of, you know, true British grit and everybody else's grit, because everybody's got a bit of grit in them somewhere, to just try and kind of go, okay, we will come through this, you know, let's see if it's a, maybe just use it as a moment to kind of reflect on one's life and go, is this where I need to be right now? And if it isn't, you know, we've now got this change in the world, which I do think means we can make the change in ourselves. I think it's like given us that tool. It's kind of gone, okay, we have to stay put. We've got to kind of reflect on this. So try to look at it as much as one can amidst the hellishness of it, to go, okay, I'm going to really turn this around so that out of this, I've done something. And it doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be earth shattering, but use it to do something that makes you feel good. You know, decide to cook for your community, decide to do the food shopping for the elderly in your neighborhood, phone somebody, keep in touch with a friend you didn't, whatever it is, it can be on a minuscule level, but just use it to make that change. Because I think that will sort of snowball, I hope.
Definitely. Thank you. And that's lovely words of wisdom. And I think that will inspire everyone. So thank you so much to you, Emma, for your time sharing.
Total pleasure.
Oh, it's been lovely sharing your incredible life as a broadcaster and a podcast host to inspire others to fulfill whatever their life and soul is truly seeking. I thank you. The Influential Women's Podcast is co-founded and host-presented by exec producer Nikki Bannerman and award-winning Juliet Nichols, and audio produced by Safran Mirza and video produced by Katie Lewis. Please subscribe for free on all podcasting platforms to hear our real-life stories out every other Tuesday.